Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Take Control, The Career You Want, Where You Want, by Gary Burnison. Narrated by Lance C. Fuller. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Limit of liability, disclaimer of warranty. While the publisher and author have used their best efforts in preparing this book, they make no representations or warranties with respect to the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this book, and specifically disclaim any implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. No warranty may be created or extended by sales representatives or written sales materials. The advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. You should consult with a professional where appropriate. Further, readers should be aware that websites listed in this work may have changed or disappeared between when this work was written and when it is read. Neither the publisher nor authors shall be liable for any loss of profit or any other commercial damages, including, but not limited to, special, incidental, consequential, or other damages. Introduction. I want to work from Tahiti. This wasn't the opening line I had expected when I sat down to talk with the daughter of a friend who had asked for my advice as she prepared to enter the workforce. When I asked where she wanted to work, I thought we would be discussing what industries or companies might be a good fit, based on her solid experience, including internships at household brand organizations. Maybe, at the end of our conversation, she'd ask me to take a look at her resume and provide some feedback. Instead, she began mentioning places around the world where she personally wanted to live with the assumption that she could work anywhere, and the opportunities would follow. Madrid would be another option, or Cozumel. What do you think? At first, I wanted to laugh, as if she were kidding. But maybe the joke was on me. Am I the dinosaur, or is this what everyone is thinking? As mind-boggling as this conversation was, it does reflect the dramatic transformation of the past few years, including today's work anytime, from anywhere reality. And it cuts across all generations and demographics. The workscape has changed. Think about it. Everything we experienced in the past has been turned on its head. How we produce, how we consume, how we're entertained, how we travel for business, and more. For so many people just starting their careers, working virtually and this environment are all they know. And, for everyone else who has had the remote option, work is no longer synonymous with a physical location. It's a push-pull world, and you have to be able to navigate and negotiate between the flexibility and opportunity you want, and the commitment and performance that organizations need. In other words, you should know how to take control. If 2 years ago someone had described the metaverse, would we have believed it? Would we have embraced it? How about hiring people we've never met in person? Working anywhere, from a kitchen table to a cafe? Leaving your workplace in March 2020, never to return again, while maybe being more efficient in your job? Sound plausible? I can remember in the old world flying overnight from Los Angeles to Germany, going directly to a meeting, and immediately flying home again. Now, I can accomplish the same thing with an hour of Zoom. And that's here to stay. This book is all about that reality, and it applies to your entire career life cycle, whether you're just starting out, or you've been at this for several years or for decades and are now struggling to adapt to this new environment. Whether you're focused on getting your next job or you are striving to get ahead where you are. And whether your ideal is going into an office or working remotely, or some fluid and ambiguous combination of both, depending on the day. Over the past few years, I've engaged in countless conversations and discussions with executives and professionals, all ages, phases, and levels of experience. With more seasoned executives, a question I often asked, and I've pondered it myself too, is to imagine that they were starting over in their career and in today's environment. Would they have advanced to the level where they are now? Would they have to do things differently? Almost to a person, they all needed to pause and reflect. most confided to me that they were not sure where they would have ended up. But, after giving it some thought, everyone said that yes, they'd absolutely have to do things differently to get ahead in today's new reality compared to yesterday's world. And that's what this book offers. Not only the perspective of someone who has been a CEO of a publicly traded company for more than 15 years, but also the insights from the firm that develops 1 million professionals a year and places someone in a job every 3 minutes of the workday. The advice here is drawn from assessments of more than 86 million professionals, so we know what great looks like. And we're constantly coaching, developing, and advancing professionals at all levels of organizations. Based on what we're hearing, and everywhere we look, the workscape is more complex. But it's also more adaptable than you may realize. And you have to be, too, especially looking ahead to when the job market tightens and the pendulum swings from what people want toward what organizations need. Even so, with learning agility and self-awareness, there will always be a way. Like the professional who had asked me for some advice on whether or not to pursue a job with a very well-known tech company. You'd recognize the name, believe me. This company is known for creating an ecosystem for its employees, an immersive world of working, eating, and even exercising on-site. What were once viewed just a few years ago as highly desirable perks, though, are now sometimes seen as drawbacks, at least for some people. As this person told me, if I work for them, they'd expect me to spend so much time there. But what if that weren't the case, I asked? What if you could ask for, and get, the flexibility you wanted? The pause that followed told me this person had not really considered this possibility before. Rather, the assumption was that things were set in stone for that employer. And that's simply not what I'm hearing these days. When it comes to how work gets done, now and in the future, it's not either or. It's all about the and. And don't think this applies only to millennials and Gen Z. I've heard plenty of seasoned professionals, and even senior executives, say they don't miss their daily commutes of 2 hours plus, sometimes each way. After working from home for 2 years, they can't imagine going back to an office every day. If that sounds like you, you're in good company. In one recent survey, more than 80% of the people who have been working from home say they don't want to go back into the office or prefer some hybrid arrangements, which is code for not going into the office very much. Other surveys indicate that some people not only want and need to continue working remotely, but some of them might even quit if their employers aren't flexible. But that's certainly not everybody. One colleague told me that she's excited to be back in the office. Not only does that fit her personal life, but it also meshes with her responsibilities. As we talked, she confided another reason. I miss seeing people in person. Turns out, those happenstance conversations, in the office kitchen while getting coffee, in the hallway, were a big part of the ties that connect us. We miss them and need to find a way to replicate them in a work-anywhere environment. And so goes today's topsy-turvy workspace. Then there was the mid-20s college graduate in his second full-time job. Throughout our conversation, he kept bragging to me about the office culture where he worked. But, come to find out, he wasn't actually working in person, and neither were most of the people in the company. The more he hyped his office culture, it occurred to me that his Zoom-based world didn't depend on an office to have a culture. The bottom line, in this new world, it's not about where you work. And that's true if you never go into a physical location or you are in a profession that requires you to be on site every day. Today, more than ever, it's all about the why. As in, why you do what you do. Take the best, leave the rest. To be honest, my own thinking on this has evolved. Much earlier in my career, when I worked with a West Coast investment bank, I noticed that the CEO looked a little bit disheveled by mid-afternoon. Then I discovered that the CEO routinely came into the office at 4 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes after his daily jog. He was there 2.5 hours before the stock market opened so he could monitor overseas markets, and frankly, that was just the way he liked to operate. This example stayed with me. When I first joined Korn Ferry, I made it a habit to be in the office by 6 or 6:30 each morning. But now, my thinking has gone 180 degrees. It is possible to be committed, or as I call it, all in all the time, without being physically present. After all, it's not activity that matters most. It's about achievement. No more applying yesterday's mindset to today's reality. We take the best and leave the rest. Think back to when we were in school. The day sometimes started in homeroom, where everybody had to be at a desk for attendance. Ironically, though, it was a positive experience back then, and for one important reason.
Homeroom wasn't a class. It was a horizontal community of students who often were not in classes together the rest of the day.
Today, we're seeing more horizontal homerooms within organizations, so that community and opportunity are omnipresent and available to everyone, no matter where or how people work. There is no one-size-fits-all solution that applies to every organization, or even within an organization. The center of gravity is shifting from a place of work to a location for collaboration. It's headspace and heart space, and within that mix, agility is critical to your success. From a job to the job. What's your why? This has been the hottest job market we've ever seen. Getting a job isn't a problem for many people. But getting the job, where you're happy and motivated and more likely to outperform, well, that's another story. A friend of mine called me the other day, wanting to discuss his 27-year-old daughter, who had just changed full-time jobs for the fourth time in 5 years. Just 2 weeks into her latest job, she was interviewing with yet another company. Like so many career nomads, moving from job to job after only a year or two, and sometimes after far less time than that, she was tempted to make another leap. I get it. The days of approaching a career path as a ladder, moving slowly and steadily upwards, eyes on where you want to be in 10 years, are over. Today, the focus is much, much shorter. As a result, career paths are more like labyrinths, looping around before moving ahead. And job hopping is no longer the pejorative it used to be, especially these days. But that doesn't change the fact that the best reason to make a job change is to move towards something, not just run away. With that advice in mind, I agreed to call my friend's daughter. The first question I asked was why she was changing jobs so soon. "'Cause I could," she replied, half-joking. But could does not automatically translate into should. So I asked her, "What's your why?" She paused. "My what?" Now we were getting somewhere. Your why is your purpose, your intrinsic motivator, the reason for making this decision, I explained. Then she let down her guard and proceeded to give me a window into her why. Remote everything, every day, feels the same, disconnected, missing being with people. She wanted to change jobs for the simple fact that she hoped to land somewhere, anywhere, different. But at 2 weeks into her job, there was still so much she could do where she was. Connect with coworkers, network across the company, learn all she could, and help shape, not just adapt to, the culture. In other words, instead of escaping after 14 days, she could be part of the solution. If after 6 months she still felt that the job was a bad fit, then she could move on. But at least she'd know more about herself and her why, and that would get her closer to the right job to advance her career. No shortcuts to success. Instead of merely moving from job to job without a real plan, it's time to consider where you really want to be. But that does take some effort. The sad fact is that people still spend more time doing research when buying a flat-screen TV or a washing machine than thinking about how to get ahead in their careers. Consider the fact that over the course of a lifetime, the average person spends 10,625 days looking at a digital device, 7,709 days sitting down, 1,769 days socializing, 240 days laughing, 180 days exercising. Yet, they spend too little time thinking about how to advance their careers. It's time to take control, with purpose and positivity. And that's where this book comes in. The goal here is to have not only the right job, but also the right career, the one that makes you feel that you really are connected to something bigger than yourself. It's purpose and passion combined. And yes, you can have that. As a CEO, I can tell you that companies are looking for people who equate their work with the pursuit of meaning, their life goals and destination. You can be one of them, and my hope is that this book will be the guide to help you get there. This book charts your career path in three sections. The first is how you're wired. You'll understand the importance of your ACT, being authentic, making a connection, and giving others a taste of who you are. You'll explore the importance of tapping into your right brain, and why learning it all is the secret to sustainable success. The second is how to get the job and get ahead. There's a big difference between getting a job and the job, and that's what this section is all about: targeting your next opportunity, networking to get an introduction, and nailing the interview. The third is how to work with others. Now that you have the job you want, it's time to turn your sights to how to advance your career. That includes mastering the four career knockout punches: getting along with your boss and coworkers, navigating culture, and communicating and connecting. This is the new norm. Instead of asking why, it's time to ask, why not? You can have the career you've always wanted and deserve. That is, if you're willing to take control. Section 1. How You're Wired. Chapter 1. Your Opening Act. ACT. What matters most is the story you tell, conveying not only what you can do, but, as important, who you are. It's about your ACT. Authentic, truthfully presenting yourself and your experience. Connection, forging a positive emotional connection with others. Taste, giving people a taste of who you are. ACT is a mindset, a language. It shapes every conversation and interaction. Whether you're networking, interviewing, navigating a new world of work, meeting people in the office, or by remote, ACT establishes rapport and relatability. Many years ago, when I was starting out in my career, someone in my network introduced me to a hiring manager at a company I wanted to work for. When the manager invited me to send a copy of my resume, I spent countless hours writing, rewriting, and polishing it. I wanted my resume to be perfect. When it came time for the in-person interview, the hiring manager opened our conversation with the usual icebreaker. "So, tell me about yourself." Immediately, I began reciting the positions I'd held thus far. The manager interrupted me. "I know what's on your resume. Tell me about you. Tell me a story so I can really know who you are." This experience changed my career path, and probably my life. I got the job, and all because I grasped two important truths. The first is a resume is not the gateway to a new job, let alone the right job. Unfortunately, many people still think their resume accounts for 90% of what it takes to get a new job, when actually, it's only about 10%. The second is always be your authentic self. Who are you? Really? If the past few years have taught us anything, it's the power of being authentic. We go beyond the superficiality of what we do and become vulnerable enough to show others who we are, by sharing some of the defining moments of our lives. When I was 10 years old, I had a moment that shaped me forever. I can still remember. It was a cold day, about 2:30 in the afternoon, and outside, it was pouring rain. A huge truck pulled up in front of our house. Its back doors swung open, and the ramp was brought down. As two men approached our house, I looked past them to the truck and wondered, "Were we moving?" When my dad came up beside me, there were tears in his eyes. He said, "Son, it will be okay." Then I watched as all our furniture was carried out the front door. My father had gone bankrupt, and everything was repossessed. That moment defined my work ethic and drive to succeed, but it did something else as well. Over the years, whenever I share my personal story, it always amazes me how people immediately respond with their own stories. It never fails to happen. We all have our backgrounds and experiences that become the legacy we carry forward on our journey. The more we open up and share, the more authentic we become, and the more relatable we are to others. Once, in a client meeting, during the "Where did you grow up?" small talk, I shared a story about being embarrassed as a high school student to go with my dad to the grocery store because we had to pay with food stamps. "I had a very similar experience," a top executive of the other company told me. When we locked eyes, we each knew what it was like to walk in each other's shoes. And this is how our ACT becomes the foundation of our empathy. Lion Larry. And then there was Larry, the polar opposite. From authenticity to empathy. Empathy is all about meeting others where they are, to understand who they are. To show empathy, though, we must first possess it, and that comes from being authentic. We know that people are not all the same, nor are they in the same place, but with empathy and compassion, we can meet them wherever they are and provide them with what they truly need. Empathy broadcasts, verbally and nonverbally. "I know how you feel. Our circumstances may be different, but I've been there too." It can become the catalyst that turns "we're all in this together" from only words to a feeling, and then to an action. It's during these times that we start down a path. Often, it begins with cognitive empathy, of merely trying to walk in someone else's shoes. It progresses to sympathy, that emotional empathy, when we try to feel what another person is experiencing. At last, we reach empathetic care, an action that manifests as care and genuine concern for others. Oh, that's Larry being Larry. This was someone I knew many years ago. The guy was brilliant and could discuss any subject, current events, politics, history, sports, with remarkable depth and insight. And when it came to job performance, Larry was amazing. But Larry wielded his intelligence like a weapon. Although I wouldn't be surprised if he had an IQ of 150, Larry was completely lacking in emotional intelligence and people skills. Larry decided he didn't have to follow the rules that applied to everyone else. He routinely blew off meetings and, when he did show up, he talked over people, crushed anyone who disagreed with him, and was completely uninterested in anything anyone else had to say. After waltzing into a meeting late, Larry thought nothing of flipping through a magazine while his colleagues made presentations or discussed their latest wins. Larry was also tough to pin down on anything, from where he was to what he was doing. Not long ago, I interviewed someone who I thought probably knew Larry. When I inquired, the person replied, "Oh, of course I know him. The thing about Larry is, he only lies when his lips are moving." His performance was so stellar, though, people made excuses for him. "Oh, that's Larry being Larry." Over time, Larry's arrogance, intellectual superiority, and downright rudeness became highly toxic to the group. Let's just say he got voted off the island. Losing his performance was hard, but making the decision to ask him to leave was easy. Most of us have a little bit of Larry-ness in us, but usually it's just trying to pass ourselves off as something that we're not. It may seem harmless at the time, trying to put ourselves in a better light or maybe avoiding embarrassment. But the truth is, we're hiding a part of what helps define who we are. I experienced this when I was a young teenager. After basketball practice, as the other kids waited outside the gym doors for their parents to pick them up, I started walking in the other direction, telling my teammates I had someplace else to be. The truth, though, was I always asked my dad to meet me a few blocks away. It was the early 1970s, and I didn't want anyone to see my dad's car, a 1956 Buick with a rusted bumper that belched blue clouds of exhaust. As I slunk low in the seat of that car, my dad knew what was going on, and I knew that he knew. But we never talked about it. He just let me be. Today, of course, I'd love to have that old Buick to restore. Even more important, I wish I could have one more chance to open that car door and sit up tall and proud beside my dad. But that was beyond what I could do as a 13-year-old. I was too embarrassed to know who I truly was. It would take a few more years and a lot more experience to own my ACT. Your ACT, grounded in humility, self-awareness. Knowing your ACT starts with humility.
If we're not humble, we'll never be self-aware. And without self-awareness, we'll never learn and grow.
Self-awareness encompasses your strengths and blind spots, your skills and experiences, what you're passionate about, your sense of purpose, what motivates you. One of our firm's early thought leaders, the late David McClelland, published seminal books that addressed motivation. The Achieving Society, 1961, Human Motivation, 1973, and several others. In his breakthrough work, McClelland identified three motivators that have the biggest effect on behavior in the workplace. Achievement, defined as the desire for mastery at the individual level. Affiliation, meaning to establish and maintain relationships. Power, in this context, having an impact or influence. Which of these three describes you? Does the desire for achievement, mastery, get you out of bed in the morning? Is it affiliation, relationships and belonging to a group? Or is it the desire for power, influence? Ask yourself, what energizes me? What's my motivation? Don't say money. Research shows time and again that it really isn't most important. Of course, compensation matters, and it must be fair. However, there is much more to consider than just your current title and salary. Your motivations, or drivers, are part of what makes you, you. By taking an honest look at yourself, your traits, competencies, drivers, and experiences, you will see who you are. Not only that, you'll also gain insights into what you need to develop so you can transform yourself into who you want to become. A look in the mirror. To know thyself, you need to look in the mirror. It starts with self-reflection, giving yourself the time and space to ask yourself the important questions that define who you are and what you do. But don't stop there. As humans, we're social creatures. We learn more about ourselves in our interactions with others. Take the next step of reaching out to close friends, confidants, mentors, and partners. Asking others how they see you is also good practice for soliciting and embracing feedback. Who you are. Traits. These are the hardwired parts of your makeup. For example, are you more assertive or passive? Do you embrace or avoid risk-taking? How confident are you in what you know and what you can do? Drivers. This is what motivates you. Your drivers can tell you what kind of company culture and environment suit you, even the type of boss you should work for. For example, which of these are you motivated by? Challenge, overcoming obstacles and taking on tough assignments. Power, achieving work-related status and influence with greater visibility in the organization. Independence, taking an entrepreneurial approach with greater freedom from organizational constraints to pursue your own vision. Collaboration, working interdependently in a group to pursue goals and achieve work-related success. What you do. Competencies. These are the skills and abilities you possess. For example, in today's environment, it's not just about managing ambiguity. It's ambiguity on steroids. Amid an unprecedented amount of uncertainty, can you handle an ever-increasing level of ambiguity? How do you find a way forward when the way is unclear? What have you learned about yourself over the past few years.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?